Srila Haridas Thakur ki Jai. Ramsika ho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasati Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki Jai. Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopinath Shyama Kunda Radha Kundigiri Govardhana ki Sri Vrindavan Dham ki Sri Mayapura Navadvaita Dham ki Sri Purushottam Chetra ki Sri Ganga Maya ki Jai Sri Jamuna Maya ki Jai Bhakti Devi ki Jai Tulsi Devi Maharani ki Jai Hari Nam Sankirtana ki Jai Shri Shri Gonitai ki Jai Shri Shri Radha Balabha ki Jai Jagannath Baladeva Subhadra Devi ki Jai Melbourne Mahaprabhu Mandir ki Jai Ananta Koti Vaishnava Brinda ki Jai. Oh glories to Srila Prabhupada. Oh glories to Srila Prabhupada. Oh glories to Srila Prabhupada. Oh glories to Shri Shri Guru Gauranga. Oh glories to the assembled devotees. Christmas time. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda
Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda
Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda
Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
So we're going to read a little bit from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. This is the beginning of the explanation of the fifth verse of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. I have described the meaning of the fourth verse. Who's speaking? Yeah. Krishna Das Kaviraj. Yeah, always good to know who's speaking. Maybe in the Chaitanya Charitamrita it doesn't. It's not as complicated or complex as the Bhagavatam. So very often it's Krishna. Well, I guess it's Krishna Das Kaviraj speaking all the way through. But certainly in the Bhagavatam there are many, many conversations within conversations within conversations. I have described the meaning of the fourth verse. Now, O devotees, kindly hear the explanation of the fifth verse. Just to explain the original verse, I shall first suggest its meaning. I have given the essential meaning of the fourth verse. This incarnation descends. Who's the incarnation? Lord Chaitanya. Yes, his... Lord Chaitanya is the anniversary of his appearance is coming up, 5th of March. I have given the essential meaning of the fourth verse. This incarnation descends to propagate the chanting of the holy name and spread love of God. This is Lord Chaitanya's purpose, right? Krishna has a purpose, just like you and I have a purpose. Although this is true, this is but the external reason for the Lord's incarnation. Please hear one other reason, the confidential reason for the Lord's appearance. Purport, in the third chapter, fourth verse, it has been clearly said that Lord Chaitanya appeared to distribute love of Krishna and the chanting of his transcendental holy name, Hare Krishna. That was the secondary purpose of Lord Chaitanya's appearance. The real reason is different, as we shall see in this chapter. The scriptures proclaim that Lord Krishna previously descended to take away the burden of the earth. To take away this burden, however, is not the work of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The maintainer, Lord Vishnu, is the one who protects the universe. But the time to lift the burden of the world mixed with the time for Lord Krishna's incarnation. What does that mean?
He came because he wanted to come.
Yeah. Yes, that's pretty cryptic.
He wasn't forced to come.
Yeah. But the time to lift the burden of the world mixed with the time for Lord Krishna's incarnation. What does that mean? We know he was meant to come.
Two events coincided.
Yes. Yeah. And what were they?
The time is scheduled for the Lord's incarnation.
The schedule, yeah. The schedule to fulfill the desire of Bhumi to destroy the demons. That was the request of the demigods. But in one sense, that's also an external reason. But the internal reason for Krishna appearing was to associate with his devotees in Vrindavan, not to fight demons. And Prabhupada said before, that's the service of Lord Vishnu. Right? Lord Vishnu is God in the office. Right? Krishna is God playing in the forest. Right? There's a difference. Purport. Let's hear what Prabhupada's got to say before we get too involved, too caught up in our own speculations. But anyway, let's see if it's a speculation or not. We have information from Bhagavad Gita that the Lord appears at particular intervals to adjust a time-worn spiritual culture. Lord Sri Krishna appeared at the end of Dwapara Yuga to regenerate the spiritual culture of human society and also to manifest his transcendental pastimes. Vishnu is the authorized Lord who maintains the created cosmos, and he is also the principal deity who makes adjustments for improper administration in the cosmic creation. Sri Krishna is the primeval Lord, and he appears not to make such administrative adjustments, but only to exhibit his transcendental pastimes and thus attract the fallen souls back home, back to Godhead. However, the time for administrative rectification and the time for Lord Sri Krishna's appearance coincided at the end of the last Dwapara Yuga. Therefore, when Sri Krishna appeared, Vishnu, the Lord of Maintenance, also merged in him, because all the plenary portions and parts of the Absolute Personality of Godhead merge in him during his appearance. When the complete Supreme Personality of Godhead descends, all other incarnations of the Lord meet together within him. Purna. Purna Bhagavan. Avatare ye Kali. Ara sabha avatara tante ashi mile. Forgive my Bengali. Is there any Bengalis here? No, it doesn't look like it. Okay. Have you got an iPhone with you? No. Open up to Adi Leela 4, text number 11. You can read the Bengali. Paka. Paka Bangla. As opposed to my... Yeah, text number 11 and 12 is where I'm up to. Are you reading the Bengali? Can you read the Bengali? No, if you could see it, can you read it? Okay, good. Maybe you should have the book and I should have the iPhone. Okay, all right. Lord Narayan, the four primary expansions, Vasudev, Sankarshan, Pradyumna and Aniruddha, Matsya and the other Leela incarnations, the Yuga avatars and the Manvantara incarnations and as many other incarnations as there are, all descend in the body of Lord Krishna. In this way, the complete Supreme Godhead, Lord Krishna himself, appears. Next. At that time, therefore, Lord Vishnu is present in the body of Lord Krishna. And Lord Krishna kills the demons through him. Thus, the killing of the demons is but secondary work. I shall now speak of the main reason for the Lord's incarnation. Lord's desire to appear was born from two reasons. He wanted to taste the sweet essence of the mellows of love of God, and he wanted to propagate devotional service. In the world, on the platform of spontaneous attraction. Spontaneous attraction, right? Not sadhana, but raga, bhakti. That's what he wanted to establish. Thus he is known as supremely jubilant and as the most merciful of all. Hang on a minute. Purport. During the period of Lord Krishna's appearance, the killing of asuras or non-believers such as Kamsa and Jarasandha was done by Vishnu, who was within the person of Sri Krishna. Such apparent killing by Lord Sri Krishna was a matter of course as an incidental activity, but the real purpose of Lord Krishna's appearance was to stage a dramatic performance of his transcendental pastimes at Brajabhumi, thus exhibiting the highest limit of transcendental mellow in the exchanges of reciprocal love between the living entity and the Supreme Lord. Okay? Hang on, I'm finished here. That's halfway through. These reciprocal exchanges of mellows are called raga bhakti, or devotional service to the Lord in transcendental rapture. We have the word rapt. Right? Rapt. He was really rapt in her. Sometimes people spell it WRAPPED, but that's not the rapt. Right? It's RAPT, rapt. Rapt attention. So, you know, rapture is complete absorption. Lord Sri Krishna wants to make known to all the conditioned souls that he is more attracted by raga bhakti than vidhi bhakti, or devotional service under scheduled regulations. Ooh, what does that mean? It is said in the Vedas, raso vai saha, the absolute truth is the reservoir for all kinds of reciprocal exchanges of loving sentiments. He is also causelessly merciful, and he wants to bestow upon us this privilege of raga bhakti. Thus he appeared as his own internal energy. He was not forced, as Rasa said, he was not forced to appear by any extraneous force. Okay, so what does that mean? Lord Sri Krishna wants to make known to all the conditioned souls that he is more attracted by raga bhakti than vidhi bhakti, or devotional service under scheduled regulations. What does that mean?
Rituals.
Huh?
Rituals?
Rituals? Rituals what? It's very simple what it means. Krishna is more attracted to raga bhakti than vidhi bhakti. That's what the outward statement means. But what does that mean for us? Because we all should be vidhi bhaktas, at least in the beginning. But the goal is to become a raga bhakti bhakta, isn't it? How do we do that? This is our responsibility. How do we do that? Follow the, yes, sato vritte, follow the previous acharyas. What else do we do? Do the part?
By following vaidhi bhakti.
Yeah, by following vaidhi bhakti, yep.
By hearing and chanting.
Yeah, definitely by hearing and chanting, yep. We need to read on. We need to read the Chaitanya Charitamrita to find out. Right? And of course, what's the key? What's the key? What was the external purpose for Lord Chaitanya's appearance? What's the one word, Sanskrit word for the purpose that describes the purpose of Lord Chaitanya's appearance? Starts with an S. Sankirtan. Yeah. By the chanting of Hare Krishna, we can easily enter into this mood of raga. There are five activities that inspire prema bhakti, right? Without a person even having faith in them, they can experience prema. So what are those five? What's the first of those five activities? And it starts with an S, but is not sankirtan. No, and it's not Shravana. Although it automatically happens as a result, but it's not Shravana. Yeah, Sangha. Sadhu Sangha. Isn't it? Then what comes after Sadhu Sangha? Wrong verse. Sankirtan comes. Sankirtan. Sadhu Sangha, Sankirtan. Then what's next? Who knows what's next? Also starts with an S. No? Part of sadhana? Srimad Bhagavatam. Go to the top of the class. Yeah, Srimad. Hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam. Right? Then what's the next one? Very important. Huh? Deity worship. Yes. Prabhupada established deity worship for a very specific reason. It's an impetus for prema bhakti. Right? Because we think, oh no, I've got to get up and do the arti. Right? Which is not an impetus for prema. That's just a symptom of laziness. Right? But if we become absorbed in the deity worship, then it's an impetus for prema. Right? When we see the deities in the morning, it's inspiring. Right? Especially when we combine the deity worship with sankirtan, then it's even more inspiring. Right? And then residing in a holy place. These five items are impetuses for prema. And in that absorption of prema, we can taste the mellows of raga bhakti, which is spontaneous and spontaneous enthusiasm for serving Krishna. Right? That's why we're so happy. You know, after a kirtan, right? Krishna allows us entrance into that very mercifully allows us entrance, especially through sankirtan. So Lord Chaitanya's, but mind you, sadhu sangha, Srimad Bhagavatam, the worship of the deity, and residing in a temple or in a holy place, that's also part of the sankirtan. That's part of the sankirtan. What should we call it? The sankirtan mood, the sankirtan mission, the sankirtan culture. You can't have the sankirtan culture without the deity worship. You can't have the sankirtan culture without studying the Srimad Bhagavatam. You can't have the sankirtan culture without the association of the devotees. Otherwise, who are you going to chant Hare Krishna with? Have you ever tried chanting Hare Krishna by yourself? On the street? Anybody tried that? Anybody tried just two devotees going out? Yeah. Is it ecstatic? It is, but it'd be nicer if there were more devotees, right? When there's 100 or 200 devotees coming down the street, and the wampas are going, and the mridangas going, and the kartals are going, then it's a big sound, right? It's like a locomotive coming down the street, right? And all the kamis are going, ooh, what's this? How come there's so many Hare Krishnas out today, right? And they get scared. Huh? People get scared when they see the Hare Krishnas because they know sooner or later I'm going to be one of those guys. Right? And they think, oh, I don't want that. But they know actually it's inevitable. Right? It's inevitable. The sound vibration of the Maha Mantra just permeates everything. And it goes into the ear and into the heart. And that's when everything's revealed at that point, especially on the sankirtan. The sankirtan reveals everything to us. Right? When you're out on Harinam, then everything is revealed. And the main thing, when I say everything was revealed, what's revealed is that mood of prema bhakti. Now, we're not qualified for that, really, in one sense. we came to the material world not, well, maybe some of us did, but most of us came to the material world not to taste the mellows of bhakti ras. But we came to taste the mundane mellows of material life. Right? So, you know, when we wake up in the morning, we're spontaneously attracted to reading a newspaper or whatever. But, Lord, even though we're not qualified, Lord Chaitanya is so merciful that he allows even the most... that's why he's called Patita Pavana, right? Because he allows even the most fallen to taste the mellows of prema bhakti. So you see it sometimes. People who don't chant 16 rounds, don't follow any regulated principles, probably not even vegetarian, and yet they'll jump into the Sankirtan party and they'll jump and up and down and dance and be just as enthusiastic as all of the regular devotees. And yet they're not qualified. Well, neither are we qualified, actually, in one sense. But Lord Chaitanya is so merciful that he gives anybody an opportunity to enter into that mood. What is it? What does he say here? Jubilant. Right? Where was that? Jubilant. Jubilant, and what else was it? Speak up. Yeah, that's what I thought. Can't see it here. Thus he is known as supremely jubilant. What does the word jubilant mean? There's a good one. We don't use that one word very often. Jubilant. What does that mean? Blissful. Quick, get your iPhone out and blissful. Type it in. Huh? Blissful. Jubilant, blissful. Close. Huh? Great happiness. Jubilant, yeah. Excitingly happy, you know. Just floating. And yellow, you know, roaring. When you're jubilant, you'll be roaring. You know, just carrying on. Don't care what anybody thinks. Right? Huh? Yeah, ecstatic is close. Yeah, jubilant. But making a lot of noise at the same time. What? Chanting Hare Krishna. So you see, when the Sankirtan party, everybody very absorbed in the Sankirtan, they're all dancing and they're roaring. What? When the non-devotees see that, they shake. Because they can see the power. They can feel the power of the holy name. And it's basically shaking the material world to pieces. What did you find?
Oh, expressing joy.
Expressing joy, very good one. Yeah, expressing joy. So jubilant means, you know, you're not quietly happy, you're loudly happy. Right? Jubilant. And merciful. Right? Because, you know, most people think of spiritual life as, you know, peace, love, right? Shanti. Right? You see it when people, especially with the Indian families, you know, there's always people, they come to the temple and there's the devotees in the kirtan, they're all jumping up and down and going, hey, bo, you know. And then there's, well, there's the offering of pranams, like that. And they're looking at the devotees like, you know, breaking the, you know, making a loud noise. peace, peace, man. You know, the devotees are not peace. In one sense, it's, you know, we were doing a brand workshop yesterday with Alia, and one of the things that we discovered is that the Hare Krishnas are full of contradictions. Apparent contradictions, anyway, you know, because spiritual life is meant to be peaceful, right? And you don't make a, most people don't, you don't make a fervent show of jubilation, right? You're supposed to be peaceful. But the Hare Krishnas, everybody knows they're spiritual, but they're making all this noise, right? And as one of the devotees says, you know, people just wish we would shut up. Huh? But we're not going to shut up. Huh? Lord Chaitanya's mission is Sankirtan. So that means make a loud noise. Huh? So they're always saying, can you please turn it down? And we think, oh, turn it up, turn it up. Huh? Huh? Especially when, you know, if somebody's saying turn it down, then we're thinking, we're the civil disobedience movement of Lord Chaitanya. You know, when we go past the Christians in Swanston Street, they're trying to yell louder than us, and so we chant louder to drown them out, and we make out that we're stuck at the traffic lights, so we can't go any further. And then the other people who see it, they think it's really funny. Look at the Hare Krishnas, they're drowning out the Christians. So they're laughing. Because we don't want to agitate anybody. So we're careful not to overdo it, or we should be careful not to overdo it, because we want to maintain our relationships with everybody. But the mood is, you know, jubilation. And you know what comes with jubilation? What comes with jubilation? Just think about it. How do you feel when you are chanting Hare Krishna and you're feeling jubilant? How do you feel? Huh? You feel lazy?
No.
Feel like sleeping?
No.
Huh?
Enthusiastic.
Yeah, enthusiastic. What else? Huh? You have to speak up because I'm going. You want to give it to others? Yeah? Yeah? What's that a symptom of?
Compassion.
Huh?
Compassion.
Yeah. But how do you feel? Enthusiasm?
Inspired.
Huh? Inspired. Yes, inspired.
Blissful.
Yeah. What about confident? Do you feel confident?
Yeah.
That you're doing the right thing? They say, ah, Hare Krishnas, what do you guys know? What do we think? We don't care. If we're wrong, we still like it. Right? So we feel confident about what we're doing. You know, so there's a bit of a swagger. We're the Hare Krishnas, step aside. But we shouldn't be too proud. But we'll feel confident. We should be humble, but at the same time we can be confident of Prabhupada. We can be proud of Prabhupada, we can be proud of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, especially when we feel the ecstasy. We're not going out to feel the ecstasy necessarily, but that will automatically come. So that's a little bit of a trick. We can become absorbed in the mood of enjoying, but we have to be careful about that, because actually it should be done in a mood of service. Then automatically the mellows of devotional service will arise in the heart. But Sankirtan requires humility. Right? But at the same time, it generates a certain degree of pride and confidence in the heart and minds of the devotees. There's another dichotomy, right? We're feeling proud of Krishna, we're feeling proud of Prabhupada, we're feeling proud of Lord Chaitanya and his Sankirtan mission, but at the same time we have to be humble. That's a dichotomy, right? It's mentioned that when Lord Chaitanya was performing Sankirtan, then two emotions at once would appear in his body. Also in Radharani's, two emotions, or maybe three or four emotions appear all at once, and they're competing with each other. Inspired by their absorption in prema. Now we can enter that mood by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya through the Sankirtan. But very, 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 very powerful. And when we experience that, then all sorts of things. Like you see these pictures of Harinamananda, and he's jumping higher than the town hall clock. Huh? Hanging from trees, like monkeys. Monkeys of Vrindavan. Or whatever. Because generally speaking, we suppress that. Like, you know, Srila Prabhupada was experiencing ecstatic symptoms on some occasions, but ordinarily he would suppress those. You know, we shouldn't make too much of a show. What's that? Ati sarvatra. What is it? What's it? What's the last word? Varjet? Narajet. I thought it was Varjet. Varjet, isn't it? Ati sarvatra? Varjate. Yeah. We shouldn't overdo anything, right? But anyway. Okay. We'll read a little bit more. Okay. Sucharu, text 17, huh? We'll finish. I got it, because I need to talk a bit. All the universe is filled with the conception of my majesty. But love, weakened by that sense of majesty, does not satisfy me. Right? What does that mean? What does that mean? Krishna... not in the mood of awe and reverence. He's not attracted to as much to the mood of awe and reverence as he is attracted to that spontaneous love where the devotees will give up anything to serve Krishna. And that's manifest in the character of the gopis. So in one sense, the Sankirtan mission gives us access to the mood of the most confidential devotees of Krishna, the residents of Vrindavan. And you know, that feeling of spontaneous love, that's what they're feeling. And we can connect to that by the association of the devotees, by Sankirtan, but especially by Sankirtan. Lord Chaitanya is introducing it. Next one. If one regards me as the Supreme Lord and himself as a subordinate, I do not become subservient to his love, nor can it control me. Okay, I'll read this. This is the last one we'll read, because this is a very attractive subject matter, but we need to do some other things. In whatever transcendental mellow my devotee worships me, I reciprocate with him. That is my natural behavior. Purport. Who amongst the devotees here reads the Chaitanya Charitamrita? You should read the Chaitanya Charitamrita. You know, sometimes devotees think, oh, I haven't read the Bhagavad Gita, I can't read the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Well, you can. And one of the things that will happen, when you read the Chaitanya Charitamrita is that you'll understand what ISKCON is. Right? And what it's for. Very important. And the principles of ISKCON, the culture of ISKCON. The Lord, by His inherent nature, reveals Himself before His devotees according to their inherent devotional service. The Vrindavan pastimes demonstrated that although generally people worship God with reverence, the Lord is more pleased when a devotee thinks of Him as his pet son, personal friend, or most dear fiancé, and renders service unto Him with such natural affection. The Lord becomes a subordinate object of love in such transcendental relationships. Huh? The Lord becomes a subordinate object. When we come in awe and reverence, we're the subordinate. Right? And when a devotee serves Him in these higher rasas, Krishna becomes the subordinate. He becomes a servant. Krishna becomes a servant of His devotee. Of course, the devotee never thinks, now you're my servant. Of course, when they get proud and they think, now I've got Krishna under control. What happened? Radharani thought she had Krishna under control, and what happened? Poof, he disappeared. So how tricky Krishna is. The Lord, such pure love of Godhead is unadulterated by any tinge of superfluous, non-devotional desires and is not mixed with any sort of fruitive action or empiric philosophical speculation. It is pure and natural love of Godhead, spontaneously aroused in the absolute stage. This devotional service is executed in a favourable atmosphere, freed from material affection. Okay. Chaitanya Charitamrita is really a very amazing book because it helps us understand, you know, why we're here, what we're supposed to be doing. We're supposed to be raga nuga bhaktas, actually. Of course, you don't jump prematurely to the higher stages of bhakti and just imitate. It's not imitated. It's spontaneous, which means it'll come out naturally. It'll emerge and reveal itself naturally. If we engage in the Sankirtan mission, then it's Lord Chaitanya's desire and his blessing that the rag or the spontaneous mood of devotional service will automatically manifest. You can't force it. It's not forced. Devotional service can't be forced because it's not under the control of the material energy. It controls the material energy. But one has to know how to practice bhakti in order for it to manifest. And as I said, these five items, especially Sankirtan, because that's why Lord Chaitanya came, is the method, the means by which we can, connect to that ocean, that bhakti rasa, bhakti rasamrita sindhu, the ocean of bhakti. You know, the great devotees relish swimming in the depths of the bhakti ras. They're not attracted to any other, they're likened to, what are they, in the nectar of devotion, what are great devotees likened to? What's the analogy that Rupa Goswami uses? Shark. Yes, shark. The sharks aren't interested in swimming in shallow rivers. Right? They swim in the depths of the ocean. So Prabhupada says, they're not attracted to small pleasures of the material world. But they're attracted to the ocean of bhakti ras. And so they're always absorbed in that and not attracted to, you know, material pleasures at all. So that's really Lord Chaitanya's mercy, isn't it, when you think about it? That we can be completely absorbed in the bhakti ras, but Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, you know, even though we are embodied, Vishaya Vinivartante, what is it? Rasavajam Rasopyasya Param, Drishtva Na Nivartate. Yeah, so what's the first word? The first word of the verse? What's the second line then? Niraharasya Dehina. Of those who are embodied, we've got senses, right? If you've got a body, then that means if you're a person, right, then that means you'll have senses. That's a symptom of personality, is to have senses. The king of the senses is the mind. So long as we've got a body, we've got senses, and the senses will be attracted to the objects of the senses. But if one experiences a higher taste by the performance of devotional service, then he won't be attracted to material things. Even though there may be a tendency for the senses to go towards them, he's experiencing a higher taste within, so they become meaningless. So that's Lord Chaitanya's mercy. Manifest in the Sankirtan mission or the Sankirtan movement. That's the external manifestation, but the internal reason is so that we can relish raga bhakti or prema bhakti or bhakti ras. Anybody have any comments or questions? Okay. What does that mean? You don't want to ask a question because it's not long to go to breakfast. Okay, all right. Om Agyana Timirandasya Agyananjana Salakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vishnam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadama Yandadati Svabhadantikam Mukkam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Lankaya Te Gurum Yat Kripatamam Vande Sri Gurum Dinatarinam. Okay. Some information. Every month, our temple executive is meeting and analysing our current situation and working on plans for the future. So we had a meeting yesterday, and I wanted to report to you some of the results of that meeting, and certainly looking to receiving some feedback
If you want, or if you like, or if you have any, you're certainly welcome to give us some input. First item I wanted to talk about is the kitchen. We spend about $400,000 a year on boga and other items, plates, spoons, cups, flour, rice, a lot. One of the things that we're discussing is controlling the kitchen. Right? At the moment, the kitchen's pretty much out of control. Anybody notice that? Huh? Not out of control. We have a kitchen manager, Suchiru. But, you know, last year we decided, let's try and save 10% of 400,000. That's reasonable. Exercise, don't you think? Trim off $40,000. What could you do with $40,000? Quite a bit, right? But you know what happened? Instead of trimming off $40,000, we increased $40,000. Don't laugh. That's a lot of money, isn't it? $40,000. So this year, I'm going to be pushing Suchiru and others to try and save that $40,000, or at least not increase. We try to make the temple as open as possible for everybody, because it's everybody. This is Krishna's house, and Krishna wants everybody to come to his house and have a party, right? But, you know, we've got to try to avoid waste and being, what's the word, waste? Yeah, wasteful, basically. Extravagant. Of course, that's kind of odd, because this is, again, you know, the unity and diversity principle. We want to welcome everybody to come and eat as much prasadam as they, well, no, maybe not as they like, right? But at least take prasadam and be satisfied. That's, you know, if somebody comes to your house, right, you're happy to feed them, aren't you? Who's a householder here? Do you like to invite friends over for prasadam? Right? And you like them to eat as much as they're satisfied with, right? Usually more. Is that right? But what happened? What would you think if your guests, when they left, took some of the boga out of your cupboards, or, you know, took more than they needed? And what would you think? What would you think? You know, sometimes devotees come here and, you know, they walk out with 6 or 7 plates of prasadam. What are they doing? You know, the principle of our prasadam distribution is not that we feed all of the householders around Albert Park. It's we come and take prasadam and we are satisfied and then we go home. But, you know, there's a little bit of a tendency for some devotees to think, oh, yeah, I live near the temple. They're cooking prasadam. I can just fill up whatever I like and go home and feed my family. But that's not the mood, actually, that Prabhupada had for prasadam distribution. So, you know, we should feed as much as we can distribute and people can eat naturally. But, you know, taking prasadam away from the temple, I know it's done and we do have a surplus on occasion, but we should try to ease back a little bit so that everybody's satisfied, but we're not cooking, you know, so that we feed the whole of Albert Park. Does that make sense? You know, we have to temper it with a little bit of common sense. Because that's costing us money that we could be saving for doing other things. So the kitchen is an area where we need to show a little bit of restraint. You know, sometimes devotees have programs and they think they can just come to the temple and cook and then just take it away and distribute the prasadam and it's okay. Without discussing with the kitchen manager or with anybody. Or they're going to have a birthday party and they think, yeah, it's okay, I'll bring a boga. Or sometimes they don't even do that, they'll take the temple boga and cook up a party. They'll have a party, yoo-hoo, let's have a party. But without consideration of the fact that really, you know, birthday parties, they're okay, but that's not what we're here for. You know, if you want a birthday party, then really you should pay for it. Right? Not that Krishna, you know, oh, it's all right. It's all on. Everything belongs to Krishna. And so, you know, I'm Krishna's. And because I'm Krishna's, then whatever is Krishna's is mine also. And so therefore it's okay. Right? Look, it's actually good. All of these are actually signs that are positive. Because it means the devotees think, yeah, this is my temple, Krishna's mine, you know, this is all good, actually. Right? When you think about it, it's not a bad thing. It's a good mood to have. But when we want to be, you know, we want to build a... Well, there's a number of things we want to try and do this year. One of them is raise enough funds to build a new commercial kitchen. That's $2.2 million at this stage, if we were to do everything, right? Along with the kitchen comes, you know, sheds down the side of the paraphernalia room where we can store things, move the prasadam hall over to where the theatre is, shift the theatre up here, build a gazebo in the backyard where we can have our jug, like a jugyashala, right? So that's all part of that plan that's been approved by the council. If we want to do that, we've got to raise a lot of money. So one thing we could do, or one thing we've identified, is at least in the kitchen, let's pull it back a bit, right? If anybody here doesn't eat, you know, quite as much as they ordinarily do, are they going to die of starvation? Anybody here going to die of starvation? Not likely. Right? And even if you miss out on one meal, you know, a few hours later there's another one. Isn't it? Yeah. So nobody's going to die of starvation. But anyway, we're going to try. So when Sucharu comes to you and requests you to ease off on the boga and maybe cook a little less, keep in mind that he's authorised by Radha Ballabha to do that. And probably most of you don't, you know, it doesn't apply to you anyway. Is that right? How many people here cook in the kitchen? One, two, three, four, yep. Anybody else? Five, six? Yep. You know, the Mahaprasadam just needs to be Mahaprasadam offering to Krishna. It doesn't have to be a pizza party. Right? You know what I mean? I'll tell you why. Because if you're cooking for yourself, you're not cooking for Krishna. Right? Oh, we'll have this and we'll have that and we'll have the other thing. Whoa! And I'll please all the devotees. No, that's not what Mahaprasadam is about. Mahaprasadam is not about distributing, you know, lots of pizza to everybody. It's about pleasing Krishna and giving him an offering. And then, you know, a little portion of the Mahaprasadam is sufficient for purification. Not eating lots of pizza. Just as a random example that I could just happen to think of, right? That means we're feeding the devotees' tongues. We're not actually pleasing Krishna by cooking what he likes. Not that he doesn't like pizza, mind you, right? But, you know, we don't go into the deity kitchen to cook a big offering for the devotees when it's actually meant to be an offering to Krishna. And so we have, you know, a certain number of plates. That's all that needs to be filled up. That's the standard, right? Just the offering is just a little bit for Krishna. You know, there used to be Ananya Bhak and Damantari and a few devotees, they used to fight over the Mahaprasadam. Right? People don't fight over the Mahaprasadam these days because there's so darn much of it. They don't have to. Right? But when Ganga Maya used to cook an offering, Sri Hari Bhakti used to cook an offering, Korma used to cook an offering, or Chincharupa used to cook an offering, it was just especially the 7 o'clock offering, just enough for the plates. So because of that, the devotees used to fight over it was so good, there'd be scuffles, and Korma and Balaram would have rules. No, you know, we used to have the breakfast club. Do we still have the breakfast club? Do you know what the breakfast club is? Oh, you're missing out. The breakfast club, they sit out on the back steps, out the back there after the breakfast offering is offered. They still do it. They still do it, don't they? Yeah, there's the breakfast club. Only now it's, you know, the householders come in and they pinch breakfast and take it to work. Anyway, this is it's a fine line to walk, right? We want to be merciful and magnanimous, but we don't want to be stingy, nasty and stingy, because that's not our mood. But at the same time, we've got to, you know, preserve our assets in one sense by not overdoing it with the prasadam. What do you reckon, Sutradik? So, you know, you'll all be getting a bit of heat from me, but primarily it'll be aimed at him to try and, you know, preserve, keep some standards. We'll be working on standards for feasts, standards for offerings and so forth. You know, here's a few examples. You know, the devotees are not straining the ghee and the oil. They're just throwing it out. But we could be straining those items and reusing them. And they're very expensive. Oil and ghee is super expensive. But if we reuse it, okay, it means time and effort, but we can reuse those items, so instead of spending, you know, hundreds of dollars a week, we can keep it to a couple of hundred dollars a week. Right? So simple things. Requires more effort, but that's really our devotional service in one sense. The effort that we put into preserving things. And we know Prabhupada was, you know, he was an expert in preserving things. You know, we've grown up in pretty much, living in Melbourne, we're all living pretty much in the lap of luxury, aren't we? But nobody's going hungry. Everybody's got a job. Everybody got a job here? Yeah, see, everybody's got a job. It's called devotional service. And so Krishna's looking after us. We got people come walk into the temple every day and give us donations. You know, we're not short of anything. But we are short in a sense that there's a lot of other things that we want to do. Right? So the kitchen. Quickly about the kitchen. At the moment, we're in a silent phase of the fundraising for the kitchen, which means we're not publicly announcing the fundraising campaign. We'll be doing that in a few months' time. But at the moment, we're interviewing some of our top supporters and donors, and we're looking for the significant donors who can help inspire others by giving substantial donations to the kitchen campaign. You know, we're looking in the realm of $100,000 or $200,000, or even in $500,000. Anybody here who thinks they might be able to contribute $500,000 to the kitchen? Well, okay. I didn't think so, but anyway. Well, so if you want to participate in this part of the campaign, then there is a link. Did that link go up on the webpage? Yeah? You don't know. Okay, probably hasn't. On Monday, tomorrow, we'll make sure there's a little article and a link to an online survey. Right? You got an email? Oh, okay. Did you go to do the survey? Huh? It's what? Okay, did you go? No. No. All right, go and do it. One of the things about surveys is that people don't do them. But if you want to participate at this stage and give us an indication of your support or give us some suggestions, or if you know somebody who might like to participate, let us know. Because we'll be doing this in the future. But at the moment, as I say, we're at work, but it's quiet work. Like, we're not making a big noise about things until we identify, you know, that some of those substantial supporters who can really help us out and get an idea of how much we can expect to raise. Maybe 2.2 million is too ambitious, and we might have to ease back on our our goals. And, you know, break the project can be broken up into phases. It doesn't have to be all done at once. So we may have to do that. So, that's where it's going to be a while before we really get into the campaign proper, because we have to do a couple of things. One of the things is we need to be assured of the amount of money that we could hopefully raise. And when we have that sorted out, then we need to go to tender with the builders. You can't ask a builder for the second stage of the tendering if you're not intending to spend the money. Right? Because they spend thousands of dollars just getting your tender together to work out how much it costs to actually put everything together and put it in place. Costs them thousands of dollars of work. So you've got to be, at this stage of the game, we have to be able to say, yep, we're ready to go. So it's a bit of a, you know, we're in a bit of a catch-22 situation at the moment. Once we can determine how much funds we can raise, generally, then we can go to the builders and say, okay, give us the quotes. We've already had a series of quotes, so can we know how much the whole project's going to cost? But we're now at the second stage of, we've got all of the permissions from the council, so you know there it's all ready to go, but now we need to go to the builders and say, yep, okay, now we're ready for the second stage. But you can't do that until you've got at least an idea of how much money you're going to have, because as soon as you tell them, okay, we're going ahead, then you're committed to the millions of dollars that you're going to have to spend, right? So since nobody here's got $500,000, we'd better take it easy and find some who do have, or, you know, or however much we can contribute. Does that make sense? So stay tuned. We are moving forward. So, and another thing is, the government is not giving us the $500,000 until we can provide evidence that we can match it to finish the project. Right? It's not that they're just handing over $500,000 and say, there you go, mate, do what you like. Right? So this is one reason why we want to try, you know, another thing, plates on the kitchen, while we're on the kitchen. You know, if you, we'd like to ask the householders, please bring your own plates to the temple. Don't use the paper plates. That means everybody here, really, me included, should have a metal plate, keep it in the car or whatever, keep it out the back. We can make a space for everybody to put their plates. That's going to save us a lot of money. We spend between $35,000 and $45,000 on plates and waste, because you know you buy the plates And then have a guess what happens? You've got to throw them away. That costs us money. Right? We can save money by buying a container load of plates from China. And that might cost us $25,000, and then that's enough plates for a year. Plus, it's also it's all biodegradable, which would be good. But you know, we need $25,000 up front to do that. That's one remedy, or a partial remedy. But what we're thinking of, or what as part of the plan of the new kitchen, what's now the Didi kitchen, would be a place where we store and can wash 600 stainless steel plates and cups, right? And that way then we can do away with most of our disposable containers, and of course that reduces the waste, right? But that means, you know, we need to have that facility in place. And that way then the Prasadam Hall is the boga room and the what's now the theatre, and our plate washing facility is in the Didi kitchen. Then the other kitchen is actually separated from that. There's no connection between the two. So we can save a lot of money by doing that, but we're not at that stage at the moment. Because the devotees say, why don't you put it in now? But where do you put it? We don't have the space to put it if we're going to fit the kitchen in and do everything else that we want to do. So another area where we can save money is, you know, everybody brings a stainless steel plate. You know, we're all eating at the temple regularly, so rather than eat on paper plates, which cost money and the disposal of them costs money, bring bring your own plate. Right? That makes sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, a couple of other things that we want to do, we're discussing. We have collected funds for the Rath Cart, to build a Rath Cart. This year, we just had a very, very successful Rath Yatra. Who went to the Rath Yatra? Was it good?
Yes.
It was probably the best, in one sense, that we've ever had. It keeps on improving, right? So many people participating. You know, we were kind of thinking, you know, is it worth it? It costs us a lot of money. Sometimes we make a loss. You know, should we do it? This year, it cost us about $60,000. You know, Rath Yatra cost us $60,000 to put on, right? But we had an income of $55,000, basically. So we only spent $5,000 on Rath Yatra, which is not bad, right? But it is a loss. $5,000. It has to come out of, you know, general revenue. It has to come, you know, money has to come from somewhere if you spend it. So one of the things that we want to do is complete the Rath Cart this year. But there are some logistical problems. The devotee who builds Rath Carts is getting old, like the rest of us. And he doesn't really want to build another Rath Cart, but we're kind of encouraging him to do it. One of the things that he does that nobody else pretty much can do is build those wheels. You know, my grandfather was a wheelwright. So building a wooden wheel, you know, with an axle and spokes, that's actually a trade that's been lost, right? With the advent of the motor car, then the wheelwrights, because a wheelwright is a combination of a woodworker, which means a carpenter, and a blacksmith, a smithy, what they would call a smithy. Because the tire on carts in those days was a big iron ring, right? That was a tire. And the wheel was made of wood, so that, you know, they have to do the make spokes and all that kind of stuff. Not that Janmijaya knows how to make the tire. You know, we use a polyurethane or a kind of a rubber composite wheel these days. But the spokes and the building of the wheel, Janmijaya is one of the few people who knows actually how to do that. Right? You can't just go to a carpenter and say, "I want a wheel." They're going to say, "Oh, geez, how do I do that?" Don't know, mate. Don't know how to do it. Right? So, you know, we need to spend about $30,000-$40,000 on a cart. But what Junmi said when he visited, he said basically, I'll build a cart if you build the shed to put it in. Right? Because when you build a cart, you can't just leave it out in the open. Because have a guess what happens? It gets destroyed. So he's calling our bluff. Right. So what we need to do at the moment is build a shed, and we can get it purchase a, you know, prefabricated shed for between $10,000 and $15,000, which we'll then build at the farm. And that's where we'll park the rough cart so that it'll be sheltered from the elements. And then Jummy won't have an excuse not to build the cart. Right? So anyway, if you've got a spare $10,000 or $15,000, or you're inspired to help build Lord Jagannath's cart and want to offer anything else, then please feel free to visit the member services office after breakfast. Or in any case, keep it in mind. We'll be asking some devotees, but we won't be doing an official campaign. Now, one thing that we will be doing a campaign on, another thing that we want to do is we've got plans which have been approved by council now. It's taken some time because we hadn't done all of our research properly about building the goshala, but we want to build a cow shed for the cows down at the farm. And that's probably going to cost us around about $60,000, of which we've already received a very generous donation of $25,000 for that project, but we still need more. So one of the things we'll be doing up until Gopurnim, probably after and certainly before we start the kitchen campaign, is doing a cow protection campaign for the devotees, the devotee cows down at Hare Krishna Valley. So we'd really like to encourage everybody to participate in our cow campaign for the next couple of months at least. We're going to send an email out. We might even do a direct mail letter and we'll try and raise those funds, because Manigriva can start working now and we can try and get that shed finished before winter. We've got two of our cows are in calf, and we're looking at getting a little bull. This is another thing. We're looking at getting a little bull from there's a fellow, not very many people in Australia. Actually, you know, there's only really two farms where pure gear cows and bulls are being bred. Two or three. And one of them is New Govardhan. And the other one is this gentleman that we want to purchase this young bull from. And you may not have seen pictures. If you're my friend on Facebook, then you would have seen pictures of this little fellow. He's gorgeous. He's so beautiful. And he's really, you know, he's really well proportioned, big long ear. The beauty, they're so beautiful, those cows. They've got big long ears that come down. So we need another $5,000 just to get him. He's worth about $3,500, and it's going to cost us about $1,500 to bring him from northern New South Wales down to Victoria. But with him, we're hoping to expand our herd naturally, you know, in the future. He's an investment for the future, because at the moment, obviously, he's not going to be a stud bull at this particular point in his career, because he's only a baby. but we've got plans for him. And, you know, the idea is that eventually we're breeding ourselves into a pure bred strand of these cows. So that's our focus at the moment, is to raise some funds for the Goshala and for getting the new bull from northern New South Wales. Tell your friends. Anything else? Anything else I should mention? Oh, another. Well, we can mention that Jeff and Pauline are going to get married soon. So there's something exciting to look forward to. Pauline's not here, I don't think. Jeff is. So we're going to have something to look forward to. Bit of fun. Okay. Any comments or questions? We actually had quite a good month in January. We were very fortunate that we didn't have summer this year. Anybody notice? Or at least we didn't have, you know, 40 degree days. From the breakfast? What was it from? Crossways?
I'm not sure. Crossways. There was two different rice, one with a beer, one other one is plain rice.
Yeah.
Like a five bucket rice.
Yeah. Well, this is.
So how are we going to reduce them with the, like, subsidies and rice and halva? We throw a lot, actually.
Good.
We talk about a little money, but we throw a lot.
Yeah, good question. Look, I think we have to be realistic. When we have a restaurant like Crossways and Gopal's, there will always be waste, because we want to cook for the possibility that, you know, the maximum number of people will come. But however, we also know our history, right? We can also predict. So the cooks, the Crossways cooks and a kitchen manager have to be always monitoring how much is cooked and how much comes back, right? So that they can get as close as possible. There will be waste. We know that from Crossways. And even from the Sunday feast always gets eaten, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Saturday feast always gets eaten?
Saturday feast is not much, but Sunday feast sometimes a lot. I mean, I can see sometimes it's about one top in pakora mix. You know, they make a lot of mix.
Yeah, okay. This is where the cooks and the kitchen manager are going to have to get together. And, you know, we don't plan the kitchen enough. So it means sitting down and tracking everything, right? And then working out what we should be doing the next week. Taking into consideration, say, like last week, Rath Yatra. You don't cook for 600 people when we've already got, you know, feeding half of those people down at the festival. So it requires an understanding, or, you know, like today, well, actually, it's probably not going to affect us, but say if, you know, India and Pakistan are playing at the MCG, right, on a Sunday, then we probably don't cook as much because not as many people will come. Huh? It's today, actually.
Yes.
But it's in Adelaide. I can assume that you're not going to the cricket because you're here. You know, what is it? It's the greatest show on turf, India and Pakistan. Your career, my wife was reading me an article in a paper. Your career can be defined by this match if you're a cricketer, right? If you slog a six, you know, and make the winning run on either India or Pakistan side, you could be a hero for the rest of your life, right? What's that award that they give people in India, the top award? What's the award that they give, the top award?
Man of the match.
Huh? Bharat Ratna.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
You'll get that medal. I'll give you that medal. Right? Or your career can be ruined, right?
Yeah.
If you do something silly. So, you know, the main thing is on this day to keep all the players cool. Keep the players calm. Anyway, if we know what's going on around about us, then we can judge, you know, by the weather. If it's 40 degrees, cook less. Right? So that's planning on the part of the cooks and the kitchen manager. Isn't it? Now, you know, with Crossways, if we're increasing our sales, we'll increase our BOGO purchasing. Right? That's fine. That's okay. And if we're distributing more prasadam here, then obviously we'll have to spend more. But, you know, we want to try and make that reasonable and try to avoid, as you say, waste. Because we do throw out buckets of stuff sometimes. And that's a little painful. Yeah, that's right. So we know that we can save money in the kitchen. But it requires management. And, you know, management means attention to detail, right? Keeping an eye on things. And sometimes, the kitchen manager has to say to somebody, "Hoop, what are you doing?" And they're going to say, "What are you talking about?" And there'll be some friction, maybe. Right? But we need to work together to try and, you know, if we focus on that and we reduce it a little bit, at least Krishna's saying, you know, we're paying attention and we're trying to, you know, so he'll reciprocate in other ways. So it means more teamwork in the kitchen. And, you know, recognition of the boss, the mahant of the kitchen. Right? So if he tells you to do something, you can't say, "No, I'm not doing it." You have to follow his instruction. Just like if I'm a pujari, you tell me to do something, I have to do it. Right? So the head pujari, everybody has to obey him in the didi room. But in the kitchen, he's the head man. Right? So, and sometimes he tells me the crossways cooks tell him what they should be doing, not the other way around. You know what I'm talking about? Bhakti Man's one of the crossways cooks. And Sucharu also likes to spend as well, right? So we've got to keep an eye on him as well. Right? All right, okay, it's getting late. Any other comments or questions? You know, we're able to do so much because we have so many nice devotees like you to appreciate what we've got and want to contribute to make it even better. That's a success. The success of the Melbourne Temple is the devotees. Virachandra? Prabhu?
We were mentioning about 2-3 projects at the same time. So which one we are focusing
on? Cows first. If you've got some spare cash, give it to the Rathayatra shed. But don't spend all of your money. We want the big donations later on for the kitchen. Cows first at the moment. But you know, if you're a Vashapuja member, don't stop that. Or, you know, it's going to be a bit tricky because the more capital campaigns you do, then the you might run the risk of, you know, your regular funds coming in. But what we want to concentrate on is the cows at the moment. You know, we've got Gaur Purnima coming up. Gaur Purnima is not a real fundraising opportunity for us. We don't, you know, donations do come in, but it's you know, it's really a Hare Krishna festival. We won't get a lot of funds from our outside supporters for Gaur Purnima. You know, if you mention Janmashtami, then they'll fight to give you something. Right? But if you mention Gaur Purnima, it's like, what's that? Huh? They don't know. See, Lord Chaitanya is a covered avatar, right? His incarnation is secret, in one sense. Right? So that's why we want to focus on the cows now. See if we can get the Goshala started, and then the kitchen campaign will come along. Probably third quarter of this year. Any other comments? Questions? Okay. The 40th anniversary. The 40th anniversary, which is going to be on May the 18th. It's on, yeah, no, what? 16th or 17th?
That weekend.
We've got the commemorative book has been sponsored by a donor. The hall, the hire of the St Kilda Town Hall for an event has been sponsored by the St Kilda, by the City of Port Phillip. And the devotees are selling prasadam on the weekends, Saturdays and Sundays, to raise funds for the other elements of the event. So bring your wallet on Saturdays and Sundays and, you know, pizza, ice cream, you know, whatever.
Samosas.
Yeah, we'll be trying to cook it. We'll be cooking it up for Saturdays and Sundays, with a little bit of variety. And hopefully always ice cream, because the kids will then want to eat the ice creams and the parents will be shelling out for the ice creams. And you can have an ice cream too if you like. But when Bhakti comes back, then we'll have more news about what's, you know, the arrangements and the fundraising and whatever. This is spiritual life, you know, worrying about money. But some people think, oh, money, material, reject it. But no. Money is the lifeblood of our preaching. Right? If you don't have money, then how much preaching can you do? Right? Oh, another thing. We've got, for the 40th anniversary, actually, we're restoring all of the paintings, so you can see the paintings gone there. And the painting of Srila Prabhupada that usually hangs there has been finished. And Prabhu said, actually, it's a shock to see it, because we've got used to seeing it in a particular way. Right? But now we're going to see it the way it was actually painted. And we'll be like, wow, what happened? Because underneath the, you know, underneath all of this soot is actually a painting. And, he's taken Balaram and Radha Krishna's here. And one of the things we're going to do is we're going to put perspex over the front of the pictures, because there are people, I know it's kind of a traditional thing to do, but they come in and they touch the paintings. The feet of all, there are some people who come in and they touch every single painting. Now, you know, I don't know why they do that. Why do they do that? Because it wrecks the painting. Balaram's feet practically rubbed off. You know, leave the mercy for everybody else. Don't just take it away for yourself. We'll trial it anyway. We're going to put a new frame and have a covering, because also the paintings are getting not damaged, but you know, there is a bit of the soot and the ghee and the water also, it does affect the paintings over time. So we're in the process of restoring these paintings so that the temple room looks, well, certainly better than it does now. There's another thing. There's so many things that we could be doing. We need to repaint this temple room. And that's hours and hours of work, isn't it? So when it was done, not this time, but the previous time, there was one girl, I've forgotten what her name was, but she just spent hours and hours and hours every week. She just painted and painted and painted. And she finished, you know, maybe a third of it was done, but she completed the whole thing by herself, one person, and did it for nothing. I gave her a set of Bhagavatams as a gift, a full set of Prabhupada's books we gave her as a gift, but she finished it all. So if you know somebody who liked to paint the temple room, let us know. And especially if they'd like to do it as devotional service, that'd be even better. Because we need to make sure that they can paint. That's another thing, because this is quite a job. So, you know, I don't know, how many thousands of dollars would you have to pay somebody to paint this? 15,000, 20,000? If you got, you know, commercial painters to come and do this job. This is the kind of job that they hate. Right? Because there's so much picking out of all the colours. And, you know, there's meant to be shades of colour here. And in fact, when it was done first, it was more than it is now. This is the cut down job. So there's another thing we need to do in our spare time after we finish the Goshala, the Rath cart, and built the kitchen and fixed up the front yard. That's another job on our horizon. Fix up the front yard because, well, for obvious reasons, that palm tree kills everything that you put under it. Or nothing will grow under it, put it that way. So we need to do something about that. Okay, let's go. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.